Thank you. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, I'm hesitant to ask, but I know in the class last Sunday morning, there was somewhat discussion regarding Samuel and the role that he had in offering sacrifices as a priest. In our study Wednesday night, we discussed that rather extensively, I think, and noted that the lineage of Samuel traced back through his father, Elkanah, in 1 Samuel chapter 1. Though Elkanah is identified as an Ephraimite, the priest, those who descended from the tribe of Levi, were not given territorial land with restricted boundaries like the other tribes were. They were given cities. And so it is possible for one to be living in the land of Ephraim as a priest and be a Levite, or as in the case of Samuel, I believe it was 1 Chronicles chapter 6, we noted that he descended from the Levites through Kohath. And so, indeed, he was a priestly lineage, therefore authorized in terms of the sacrifices that he offered and the instructions that he gave unto King Saul to wait for him that he might come and offer the burnt offering in 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 8 and the next few verses. And we talked about that, I think, rather extensively in our study on Wednesday night. If you have a question about that, I'll be happy to go back and readdress that and look at some of the charts that we looked at and so forth. Anyone have a question relative to whether or not Samuel was authorized as a priest to offer sacrifices? Okay. It was Saul who was not. That's right. Saul was not a priest and therefore not authorized to do so. All right, well, we'll turn our attention then to some other things in the context of this as we talk about Saul and the Philistines. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, beginning in verse 5, we saw the size of the Philistine army, how that it was exceedingly greater than the army of Saul. We saw that Saul had an army of about 3,000 men, verse 2. He had in his control or possession 2,000, and Jonathan had 1,000. And the Philistines are described as the sand which is by the seashore in verse 5 for multitude. And they encamped right across from Saul's army at Michmash. And we note that the people were very much afraid, and Saul's army was scattering. They were running away. And we saw on the map that many of them have crossed the Jordan River and have fled in the opposite direction in the Transjordan region of the land of Canaan. And consequently, Saul does not wait. Now, that's the key element here. Samuel said, wait. How long? 7 days. Saul did not wait. You'll note in verse 9 it says that Saul said, bring hither the burnt offering to me and the peace offerings, and he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of the offering, offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? In our comments Wednesday night, we noted that Samuel said, wait 7 days. And it would appear that Saul waited till the dawn of the seventh day and assumed that Samuel wasn't coming. But when Saul had finished offering the sacrifice, Samuel came and points out that Saul has done very foolishly. In verse 12 it says, therefore said I, now will the Philistines come down upon me to Gilgal, and I have not entreated the favor of Jehovah. I forced myself, therefore, and offered the burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of Jehovah thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would Jehovah have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. Jehovah has sought him a man after his own heart, and Jehovah hath appointed him to be prince over his people, because thou hast not kept that which Jehovah commanded thee. And Samuel arose and gat him up from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. I want to pause right there. You've talked last Lord's Day morning. We talked a little bit in our study Wednesday night about the selection of a man after God's own heart. I'm going to pass on beyond this. One other point, though, on that before I do that. In verses 13 and 14, Samuel rebukes Saul and points out that his dynasty would not be in Israel. In other words, Saul, your descendants are not going to be the lineage of kings in the land of Israel. Now, I raise the question for our consideration, and that's all that I know to do is simply raise the question. Saul was of what lineage, what tribe? Tribe of Benjamin. What was to be the tribe through which the Messiah would come? Through the tribe of Judah. That's right. The kings in Israel were to be established in the tribe of Judah. Now, we know that as we look at the reign of David, and we'll talk some more about that when we get to that. Involving the providence of God, I'll admit to you forthrightly, I don't understand all I know about that. But I know from Genesis chapter 49 and verse 10 that the scepter was not to depart out of the hand of Judah. Judah was to be the one through whom the lineage of kings would result in the Messiah coming and reigning on David's throne. Now, the point being at the right hand of God. How God might have accomplished this, we're just not told. And if you have information on that, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say. But we do know that there was the possibility of the lineage being established through Saul, somehow, some way. But it would not be because Saul had rejected the commandments of God. He had not obeyed the voice of God. And consequently, his lineage would not be established. Now, picking up at verse 15, down through the remainder of much of this chapter, Saul numbered the people that were with him about 600 men. And Saul and Jonathan his son and the people that were present with them abode in Gibeah of Benjamin, and the Philistines encamped in Michmash. And the spoilers came out of the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned the way that leadeth to Ophrah and unto the land of Shual, and another company turned to the way of Beth-horon, and another company turned the way of the border that looketh down upon the valley of Zeboam toward the wilderness. Now, what I want to note just here, and I would call your attention to what I believe is a better map on page 86 in your lesson book, because it gives some arrows that our chart here does not give. But if you'll notice the context of that, look at the direction that the Philistines send out soldiers. Now keep in mind, what was the about the number of the Philistines, their army? As the sand of the sea, they've got soldiers to send everywhere. And how many soldiers now does King Saul have left? Down to 600 soldiers. And look at where they're sending their soldiers, the Philistines. They're sending them north. They're sending them to the central portion. And by the way, you'll notice that the capital, as it were, where Saul is supposed to be king, is Gibeah. And the Philistines are just everywhere. And they're sending companies of their armies to the north, to the central, and to the south. And here's Saul sitting in the middle with 600 men. Would you be afraid? Well, they're everywhere, and you've got only 600 men. And so Saul is very much afraid. But I want you to see what Jonathan did. As you turn to the 14th chapter, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that bare his armor, "Come and let us go over to the Philistine garrison that is on yonder side." But he told not his father. Now, look, if you will, at our map just here again. We find that the Philistines are everywhere, but here are some that are encamped near Michmash. And Jonathan says, "Let's go over there and see what we can do." How many are in Jonathan's army right now? Think carefully. Two. Thank you. Two. Jonathan and his armor bearer. So let's go over there and fight the Philistines. All right, let's do that. Let's notice, if you will, that they have a garrison that they have established. And as you read on in this text, we notice that this garrison appears to be way up high, a great big ravine they're going to have to climb to get up to the garrison to fight with the Philistines. Two people. Now, if you'll notice this, beginning in verse 2, it says that Saul abode in the uttermost part of Gibeah under the pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. And the people that were with him were about 600 men. And Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, and you can read those names, it tells us that the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. And between the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other was Sina. And the one crag rose up on the north in front of Michmash, and the other on the south in front of Geba. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, this is 1 Samuel 14, beginning at verse 6. Come and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that Jehovah will work for us, for there is no restraint to Jehovah to save by many or by few. What's his argument? There's two of us and there's gazillions of them. But the problem with that is God doesn't fight with numbers. Do you see that? He's not dependent upon us responding with a gazillion men to fight against the Philistines. And as you look further in 1 Samuel chapter 14, it says, his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in thy heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. What a willing fighter. Just the two of us, lead on, general. We'll go and fight against the Philistines. Doesn't matter how many of them there are. And so what do? Jonathan has a plan. He tells his armor bearer. He said, we'll go and we'll disclose ourselves to them. In other words, we're not going to try to hide our approach to the Philistine army. And so we'll climb up this rocky crag. And if they say to us, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place. You see that at verse 9? An interesting tactic to employ in such a battle. He said, and we'll go not up. But if they say, verse 10, come up to us, then we will go up, for Jehovah hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be the sign unto us. And both of them disclosed themselves unto the garrison of the Philistines. How would you feel about that? How many are in your army? Well, there are two of us. And we're climbing up this steep cliff, and the Philistines are saying, just come on up, and we'll show you what a fool you've been. And so their response is, well, we'll just climb right on up there and we'll do battle. Now look, if you will, at the text. I'm loosely paraphrasing that, but if you look at the text in verse 11, it says, both of them disclosed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they had hid themselves. Now, what are the Philistines saying about these two men? Well, they're cowards. They're making fun of them is what they're doing. They're just making fun of them. And he says in verse 12, the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up to us and we'll show you a thing. Now, we might add to that a thing or two, but that's their attitude. Yes. That's right. That's right. God and just one man make a majority. And I find the irony of that in the identity of Jonathan. Jonathan is Saul's son. What's Saul's attitude toward this army of the Philistines? He's scared to death. What's Jonathan's attitude toward this army of the Philistines? We can beat them. We can do that. Why? Because God doesn't depend on numbers. He'll fight our battles. Let me ask you, wasn't that the thing that God had said to the Israelites way back when, before they ever came into the Promised Land? Wasn't that the argument that Joshua and Caleb had presented to the Israelites when they said, no, we can't do that. We can't go in and fight against those who possess the land. And so we won't do that. And we want to kill Joshua and Caleb because here they are saying we can. God will fight our battles. That's what Jonathan is saying. God is not dependent upon a majority of people to win. He'll fight our battles. And Jonathan is encouraged. And look at the courage of his armor bearer. You know, sometimes courage is contagious. Jonathan's armor bearer says, lead on. Wherever you want to go, I'll follow you. And that's exactly what takes place. Now look at their success. In verse 12, the latter part, and Jonathan said unto his armor bearer, come up after me, for Jehovah hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. Two or three things I want us to note on that expression. Jehovah hath delivered them. Well, they're not dead yet. But Jonathan speaks as if they were. It's over before it's ever started. A second thing I want you to notice is Jonathan says, Jehovah hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. Not, Jehovah hath delivered them into my hand. He's delivered them into the hand of Israel. Now, Jonathan's confidence is in God to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Do we see that? It's imperative that we see that. Secondly, I want you to note in verse 13 that Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet. Now, we've talked about the location of this garrison. We've talked about how that there were very rigid, or what we would refer to as steep cliffs on both sides. And Jonathan is having to climb up this ravine on his hands and knees, as we would put it, his hands and feet. He's climbing up this thing, he and his armor bearer. Now, when they get up to the top, it tells us in verse 14, and the first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men, within, as it were, a half a furrow's length in an acre of land. And there was trembling in the camp, in the field, and among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers. They also trembled, and the earth quaked, so there was an exceeding great trembling. Now, we've got Jonathan and his armor bearer, and it tells us that in the first slaughter, they killed 20 men. That implies that there may have been more than one slaughter. But these two men, their first attack, they killed 20. And how did the Philistines respond? Well, they're scared to death of two men. And why? God is with them. Yes. All right. Well, yeah, but what does that indicate? That God is with them. That's right. That's right. And so these two men are killing a whole bunch of folks. And the Philistines are trembling because of that. Now, in verse 16, look at the response. It says, and the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went hither and thither, and said, or then said Saul unto the people that were with him, number now and see who is gone from us. Well, they see that there's a battle taking place over here. A great disturbance is going on. See who's gone. Well, they look about and they find that Jonathan and his armor bearer are gone. And Saul said to Abijah in verse 18, bring hither the ark of God. And the ark of God was there at that time with the children of Israel. I have some questions about that. I'll talk with some of you about that a bit later. Maybe you can help me answer them. It says, and it came to pass while Saul talked to the priest that the tumult that was in the camp of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thy hand. And Saul and all the people that were with him were gathered together and came to the battle. And behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, And there was a very great discomfiture. Now, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines as aforetime that went up with them into the camp and from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. Explain to me what's just happened. Jonathan and his armor bearer started something. We said that courage is contagious. Saul and his armor bearer, they on their first slaughter, they killed 20 men. And now what are the other soldiers of the Israelites seeing? They're encouraged. You mean we might win this thing? So they take their swords and they join the battle. You remember a few moments ago we saw that Saul was very much afraid. And what prompted him to go and offer the sacrifice before Samuel got there? He was afraid. And his soldiers were beginning to scatter. And some of them, as you'll note from this text, had scattered even to associate themselves among the Philistines. And when the Hebrews see that Jonathan and his armor bearer are gaining a victory, and these other soldiers are now beginning to join Jonathan and his armor bearer, these Hebrews who have become deserters and are among the Philistines, now they draw their sword and they're killing Philistines. Now, what would that do to you if you were a Philistine? You've got these folks among you and everybody's drawing swords and killing each other. It would cause great discomfort here. What's that mean? It'd make you pretty uneasy. Yeah, cause great confusion. Great confusion. That'll work. That'll work. And so they followed hard after them in battle. In verse 24, the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until it be evening, and I be avenged of mine enemies." So none of the people tasted food. Oh, we got a problem. You remember a chapter or so ago when Saul demonstrated his great ability as a leader of Israel to lead their army. You remember when he first heard of the threat of the Ammonites, thank you, back in chapter 11, the Ammonites, and he was out following the oxen, and when he heard the threat of the Ammonites that we'll spare the Israelites if you'll put out your right eyes, it made him angry, and he slew the oxen and sent the oxen out through the encampments of the Israelites and said, "If you don't show up to fight, I'm going to do this to all your oxen." And we find that a whole bunch of folks came to support him, and he built up an army that way. And you recall that. And then the people were saying, well, you know, Saul has proven himself as a great military leader. Anybody that said Saul can't lead, bring him forth and we'll kill him. And you can read about that in chapter 11 in verse 12. And Saul said, no, there's not going to be any more killing today. Now, that's a loose paraphrase. But getting back to where we were in chapter 13, when Saul sees the victory that is occurring, that has been generated by Jonathan and his armor bearer, and he sees how that the soldiers are rallying and the Philistines are fleeing and they're dying and all seems to be going in his favor, he says, all right, you keep fighting. No eating until they're all dead. Well, now, is that good? No, that's not good. Ah, all right. That's right. We've got a change in Saul that's being manifested time and time again, not just in chapter 13, but now in chapter 14. Saul's beginning to be exalted with pride, being built up. I'm king. Yeah, you're fighting for me. Yeah, and he's missed the point. He's missed the point. Now, herein lies the problem. In verse 25, it says, all the people came into the forest, and there was honey upon the ground. But you see, we can't eat this because of this decree of King Saul. We can't eat until we've defeated the Philistines. But now Jonathan, where was he when all this charge by his father was being made? He's fighting the Philistines. He's leading the battle, as it were. So he didn't get that memo, you see. So when Jonathan comes through the forest, he's hungry. He's been fighting longer than any of them has. And so what does he do? He takes the end of his rod that's in his hand and he dips it in the honey and he eats honey. Now what does it do? What does honey do for you when you're hungry and you're weak? It gives you strength. Yeah. Food just does that, doesn't it? Most of the time. And so Jonathan is strengthened by the food that he has eaten. But what's happening to the rest of the army? They're fainting. Don't that happen to you when you get hungry? You begin to get weak? Well, that's what's happening to the rest of the army. And if you'll notice in the text, in verse 28, we'll begin. It says, "Then answered one of the people and said, Thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth food this day. And the people were faint. Then said Jonathan, My father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened because I tasted a little of this honey." What's Jonathan just affirmed? When I ate, what happened to me? I got stronger. You see, I was sustained. Food does that. He said, "How much more if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found? For now hath there been no great slaughter among the Philistines." Now, Jonathan's made a very valid point. We fought with the Philistines. We've rooted them out, as it were. We have their stuff. We could have eaten their food. And if we had eaten their food, then we would have been much stronger and there would have been a great slaughter of the Philistines. But there's not been a great slaughter of the Philistines. And why? Because my father, the king, said, "Don't eat." Now that wasn't very bright, was it? In verse 31, it said, "They smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ahalon, and the people were very faint. And the people flew upon the spoil, and took sheep and oxen and calves, and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat them with the blood." Somebody explain to me. Now what's taking place? When they run the Philistines off all the way back over here to Ahalon, which is, I forget now exactly where it is on the map, back over in this area somewhere. But what happens now with the Israelites? No. They're so hungry, they're just killing the animals and eating the meat raw, eating blood and all. Yeah. We look at that and we say, number one, yuck. But what we need to say is that was contrary to the law. The law said that they were not to eat blood. Life is in the blood, Genesis chapter 9, verse 4. And they were forbidden, according to their dietary rules, to eat the blood of the animals. Okay, Bruce? Well, that's right, but they're so hungry, you see, out of plausible necessity. They're making the same argument that Saul made. You know, I was so hungry, I forced myself to do it. I just had to eat. David? Well, yes. Yes, he should have fed them. You know, if you've got an army out here fighting the battle, they can't fight without food. You've got to feed the army. As someone told me a long time ago, if you've got 40 mules, you have to feed them. And it takes more to feed 40 than it does if you just have a team. You've got to feed the animals that work for you, and not necessarily calling his army animals, but you get the point. The idea is they're worthy to be fed. Bruce? Well, Saul has started the plummet, yes. And this is not the end of it. He just keeps falling and falling and falling. That's true. That's true. And Saul is not leading. Even in this battle with the Philistines, who has been the leader? Jonathan has. Saul joined after the fact, as it were, and placed these restrictions upon the people, no eating until the Philistines are defeated. And Jonathan, his son, has eaten and pointed out the foolishness of his father and the consequences of it. And now the people have occasion to eat. And they're so hungry, they're eating the animals without properly preparing the food. And Jonathan rebukes them. I'm sorry, Saul rebukes them in verse 34 and tells them not to sin against Jehovah in the eating with the blood, and demands that the people bring their oxen before him so he can see that they don't eat the animals improperly, that they prepare the food improperly, bleed the animals. Some of you who are familiar with some of that process know that the blood has to be drained from the animal so that you're not eating the blood. Well, in verse 36, Saul said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night and take spoil among them until the morning light, and let us not leave a man of them." And they said, "Do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee." And he said to the priest, "Let us draw near hither unto God." And Saul asked counsel of God, "Shall I go down after the Philistines?" And what did God say to him? Nothing. Why not? He hadn't been listening to God. No, that's right. And so God didn't respond, at least not immediately. And in verse 39, it tells us, "For as Jehovah liveth, who saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die." Now wait just a minute. Saul, this charge that he gave to the people. Nobody eats. Curse upon you until the Philistines are destroyed. Who was it that ate? His son, Jonathan. You know, sometimes we feel compelled that we're going to make an example out of somebody. Saul is determined, now's the time, I've got to be king. I made this threat. Now, even if it's my son, I've got to make good on my threat, as foolish as it was. So what does Saul intend to do? He brings Jonathan. What'd you do? Jonathan tells him, I ate a little honey. And so, Jonathan, what's going to happen to you? Jonathan's going to have to die because, you see, that's what I said. I said that this curse was going to be upon anybody that ate until the Philistines were killed. And though it be Jonathan who ate, Jonathan's going to have to die, and he's my son. And what did the people say? That ain't going to happen. That's a very loose paraphrase, yeah. But that ain't going to happen. We're not going to kill Jonathan. Now, if you want to get the wording of it, in verse 44, it says, "Saul said, God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. And the people said unto Saul, Shall Jonathan die, who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? Far from it. As Jehovah liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day." So the people rescued Jonathan, that he died not. Then Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. Noteworthy just here that the Philistines go to their own place, but they are not destroyed. There continues to be problems with the Philistines. But our point just here, what about Jonathan? Going to kill Jonathan? No. Why not? He hath wrought with God. You're not going to kill Jonathan. It's through Jonathan that God delivered us from the Philistines. And Mr. Saul, you're not going to kill him. Do we see that? Jonathan's confidence all along was not in Jonathan. It was in God who will fight our battles for us. And as Randy has pointed out, what's Saul's motivation now? revenge for me. Yes, I will be avenged. Well, see, that's not the point. And Saul, obviously, at this point, doesn't see that. Now, one thing that I want to note just here with this point is that Saul and Jonathan, they're not trying to take somebody else's land. What is it that the Philistines have been doing with these armies, sending them out this way and this way and this way? What are the Philistines doing? They're taking the Israelites' land. So Saul is defending what God has given to them. Now, we've got a problem with the Philistines. They're there. They don't need to be there. They need to be destroyed. But Saul hasn't destroyed them. But what his efforts are is not to take what's theirs, but rather to keep them from taking the land that God has given to them. Now, what was it that God said as a condition of retaining the land? Destroy them, yes, but you do what I tell you to do. You keep my commandments and you can keep the land. But if you worship and serve other gods, if you don't do what I tell you to do, what's going to happen? You're going to have curses. You're going to lose this. Wasn't that what we saw repeated at least 15 times with the judges during that 300 plus years that we discussed in the book of Judges? Yes, Donna? That's right. Now, two elements in that, both sides of that. Very good. But what we see with Saul is his faith is beginning to wane. That's right. He doesn't believe God. He's turning. You remember when, and I've talked with some of you about this, when Saul started out, how humble he was, how he considered himself low man on the totem pole, and now what's happening? I'm king. Yes. That's right. That's right. Saul is turning. Saul at first was very humble, unworthy to be king. But now, not only am I worthy to be king, but you'll do what I say. And we got problems. That attitude is not right. That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
He steps forward and says, that's the edict of the king. And you said the leader's going to be killed. Here I am. And he says, you must surely die. And that's what the people rebel and say, no, we're not killing him.
Yeah.
He's the one that led us to the Philistines. The interesting thing is that they rebel by saying, no, we're not going to do what you said. But then the next few verses, they follow him in battle anyway. They're still going to follow Saul as king.
They do, but this becomes an excuse for Saul in the next chapter. When we get to chapter 15, you know, Saul has said, well, the people overruled me over here, so I didn't kill Jonathan. And so now when we get over here with the battle with the Amalekites, you see, the reason I didn't really destroy the Amalekites is because the people wouldn't follow me. Those people, they're bad folks, you know. They wouldn't do what I told them to. No, we've still got problems. And the problem, Saul, is you. You see, the problem is your heart is not right. And that's what we learn back over in chapter 13. That's the very thing that Samuel told him when he went ahead to offer the sacrifice. In chapter 13, verse 14, he said, but now thy kingdom shall not continue. Jehovah has sought him a man after his own heart. And Jehovah hath appointed him to be prince over his people, because thou hast not kept that which Jehovah commanded thee. You didn't do what I told you to. Now, if he didn't do what God told him to, whose will did he follow? His own. He's doing what he wants to. And his heart has changed. Now, that's evidence that our heart can change. Saul started out good, but he didn't stay good. His heart was lifted up. Now, we're going to, as our studies progress, when we get over to 2 Chronicles 26, we'll talk about King Uzziah, who was a very good king. Did a lot of great things. Tore down the idolatrous places of worship. But then the text tells us when his heart was lifted up, what did he attempt to do? All right, same thing. Essentially, he tried to burn incense in the temple, and he was not a priest. Though he was the king of Judah, though he was of the kingly tribe, and though he had been responsible for many reforms, that didn't make him a priest. And when he attempted to circumvent the priest to burn incense unto the Lord, he became a leper and died a leper because of his sin. Okay? Yes, Jenny? Novel thought, isn't it? Ah, interesting observation, yes. It's got to be somebody but me. Yeah, can't be me.
This seems like a good time to make a point. You remember that before this battle, the American Standard and several other versions say to bring up the Ark of the Covenant and the priests, and then when they see this battle is on or something like that, Saul says to the priest, withdraw. Of course, the commentator says that it's possible that it shouldn't say Ark of the Covenant, but
interesting. Interesting observation. Yeah. Well, Saul, I guess one of the things that I want us to notice as we go through here is he started to plummet. It's just a downhill ride from here on. And sometimes that's what we do. We make one mistake, and then instead of fixing it, we just keep plummeting. And much like Cain, you know, Cain had obviously messed up in the offering in Genesis chapter 4. And God told him, you know, you can make this right or you can make it worse. Sin lies at your door, but do thou rule over it. And what did Cain go on and do? He killed his brother. He didn't fix things. Yes. Now, we can mess up, and our heart reverts back to many times what it was, or we develop a different kind of heart to what we had. When we look at chapter 14, someone pointed out that the people continue to follow King Saul, and indeed, we know that there are a number of victories that are listed that Saul gained, and you'll read about those in verses 47 and 48 of 1 Samuel chapter 14. He was victorious, over the Amalekites, the Edomites, the Moabites, the Ammonites, and Zobah up here in this area to the north. But be that as it may, when the people came to Samuel, in chapter 8 and said, we want a king so we can be like the nations round about us. You remember certainly what Samuel told them. What will a king do? All right. Now, when you look at these victories of this army that Saul has accumulated in verse 52 of chapter 14, the very last verse, it says, there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any mighty man or any valiant man, he took him unto him. All right. How long did Saul reign as king? 40 years. That's time to have a baby. For that baby to grow up and become a young adult. And Saul sees this young strapping boy. He said, I want you in my army. You talk about the draft. He drafted them into his army. And wasn't that just exactly what Samuel said that a king will do? And that's just exactly what King Saul did. He took their sons and made them soldiers in his army. Now, having said all that, let's notice in 1 Samuel chapter 15, we'll have time perhaps to introduce this. We note that Saul's humility has all but vanished. In verse 1, it says, Samuel said unto Saul, Jehovah sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken unto the voice of the words of Jehovah. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, I have marked that which Amalek did to Israel, how he set himself against him in the way when he came up out of Egypt. And I need somebody to tell me about that, because Samuel is citing that history of the Amalekites with the Israelites in the beginning of the days of the Israelites. What happened? Let's go back. Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. All right. Yes, please. Verse 14. You might begin at verse 8 if you would like, please. Yes, please. All right, here's what I'm going to do to Amalek. Now, King Saul, the time has come. That's your job. Destroy the Amalekites. What did King Saul do? All right. He spared King Agag. He brought back the best of the Amalek. He didn't do what God said. Now, this God said way back in the days of Moses, going to destroy them. King Saul didn't do it. All right, we'll stop there and start with chapter 15 next time.